The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Preparing the Ruins, the 2015 Annual Conference Recordings, copyright 2015. If you have purchased this recording, you may make additional copies for use by your school. You may not sell copies of the recording, nor post it on the Internet. Learn more about classical Christian education and ACCS at www.accsedu.org.
Well, good morning, everyone. My watch is showing about 9:50, so we will go ahead and get started here. Congratulations on finding this room in the inside of the maze. The ear walls went up, and it became quite tricky to get back in here. Thank you for being here this morning. I'd love for this to be, we've got an hour together, and if I could design the perfect room, we'd probably be in a big circle, because this is, I feel kind of walled off up here behind the big lectern, but I definitely want to be interactive as we can going through this process. My name is Davies Owens, and I'm at the Ambrose School out in Boise, Idaho. I have been there, this will be the start of my fourth year this year. Prior to that, I was in Atlanta, Georgia at Heritage Preparatory School, where I was head of school. And both in my time in Atlanta and in Boise, the challenge that I know is really one of the, I think, super critical, essential even to an effective school, is how do we connect well with our parents? Because that is ultimately the job that is before us. We have a very unique role as educators in classical Christian schools, probably more complicated in some ways, I think, those in public schools or just average Christian schools maybe have it a little bit easier, because we have this lofty idea that we're going to be in partnership in loco parentis with our parents. And it is something that's really been a burden to me. Last year I did a seminar on sticky parents, how do you build connections with parents in schools, and I've continued to think about this, because ultimately, despite all of our lofty curriculum and all of our amazing efforts, if we don't figure out a way to engage the parents to walk next to us, it's really going to make every aspect of the school difficult, from the children sitting in our classroom and their ability to pay attention because they've been taught discipline at home, to the way we raise funding, so many different aspects of our school. And so in my journey, this past year was a really exciting transition at Ambrose. I went from having three jobs when I first, David Goodwin convinced me to come out, and I thought, this will be great. I'll be the dean of the upper school, 7 through 12. Oh, by the way, marketing communication, and oh, by the way, we're going to be raising millions of dollars to build buildings. Do that, too. And all of that, I thought, this is wonderful, but quite ambitious. So this year, I was able to focus my job title as head of vision and advancement. So really, part of my job every day is to figure out, how do we attract more people into the school, and how do we prevent people from leaking out the back door? And it is a constant process. And so what I'm going to share with you this morning, a couple of things, kind of where we'll be over this next hour. One is, I'm just going to talk about some of these challenges, and they shouldn't be of a surprise to you. What are the things that are innately difficult about working in such tight proximity with parents? How do we better engage them, and dads in particular, although we'll talk about moms. And then I'm going to share with you the results of kind of an active study. We're in the midst of a case study in which we ambitiously decided that in a school of 300-plus parents, we're going to meet in small groups with every single father, and how that worked, and even with some moms in the process. So that's kind of what's before us. I think maybe I'd like to just start with a word of prayer. That'd be a good way just to begin our time. God and Father, we are humbled each day by the responsibility of raising up the next generation of children. And we recognize that we must be in an intimate partnership with our parents. And it is a daunting task given the pressures of the modern world. And so I pray that today, as we talk through these experiences, that you would inspire us to be more proactive in the way that we support and connect with our parents, and that they would catch the vision, and that ultimately the students in our school would be drawn to Christ and to a love of learning that would ultimately impact your world. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. So as I started thinking about parents and the typical classical Christian school, if I had to make up some categories to put them in, I did, and I came up with these four. And so if you, in your outline, I'll try to stick pretty close to it. My first one is what I call a group of kind of true believers. And true believers are basically the enthusiasts. They come in a couple of forms. They're the idealists. They're the folks that have wonderful positive words and actions. They stop other parents in the grocery store and say, I got to tell you about my child's school. It's just amazing, and they're on fire. They're sometimes idealistic, maybe because they're in the honeymoon stage, and they're that new kindergarten family, and they have found, you know, the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow in the education world. They are so excited, and that's wonderful. But we all know that honeymoon thing can't stay on forever. So the seasoned true believers that you want to have are people who are not just idealistic, but they're deeply vested in the school. They're the ones that have they've read it, they understand it, they're going to stay with you, and they're deeply committed in their words and in their actions. And that's an important differentiator. You'll hear things out of true believers like, we came to the school picnic on the first day of the year, and we literally wept as we walked in after 2 years of being on the waiting list. We were finally an Ambrose family. This is an actual quote. And I just thought, boy, I hope that lasts. So weeping when they walk on the property is amazing. So that's a true believer in the greatest sense. And then in time, you know, seasons of life happen, and people, I think, fall more into this idea of being a participant. And that means they're maybe less outspoken. They're not going to give the grocery store cheer, but they're going to be involved. They have action. They will show up to events, and they're fairly aware of classical Christian education in most ways. And you'll hear things out of a participant like, we have had 3 children graduate, and I've had many late nights and challenges, but we never forgot the vision of the goal of a graduate. We heard that first open house. Again, these are actual quotes from parents that have been with us for years. They're participating. They're a part of the community. And that's great. You want ideally to keep your families in believer and participant mode. But eventually things slide, as it does in everything in life, into what I would call an enthusiast. And this term means basically they're still positive in their words, but their actions become limited. They show up less, the volunteer activities and events. But they're enthusiasts. They're enthusiastic. They will generally talk positive, but you probably won't get them to volunteer. Maybe they're at a point in life where their oldest or their youngest child's now in high school, and they drive to school, so they don't even come in anymore. And they can potentially easily be swayed in their loyalty. And so you'll hear things from enthusiasts who, again, are more about words and actions. Things like, I appreciate the school. It has been positive. But to be honest, behind closed doors, I'm thinking of my son's interest in science. We may want to look at other options in a few years for high school. Again, real close, I've heard. Okay, so how do we help the enthusiast become much more of a participant or maybe even a true believer? And then ultimately, consumers. We live in a consumeristic society, and we see parents become consumers. Sometimes they're consumers the whole time they've been there, but they can slide into this very limited actions and limited words. It's a transactional relationship. Now, they'll sit through the parent interview, and they will have read the website, so they'll say the right things. And they may genuinely want this for their child, but there's sort of just a general cursory understanding and appreciation. And I think consumer parents can eventually fall into kind of 2 different forms of it. One is what I would call maybe the distracted. And a distracted consumer is one that isn't necessarily dissatisfied. It's sort of like your relationship that you and I have with our cell phone providers. And I've got AT&T. I don't, check in with AT&T, how's everything going, and it's all good, And occasionally I should probably see the bill and make sure they didn't go up on me. But, consumer parents just sort of are kind of just content and happy. They just go along with things. That's probably 40% of our parents. When there's a problem, they'll let you know. Otherwise, I'll do my thing, you do yours. But then there's a subset of consumer parents that are disillusioned, and we all have these. These are the ones that are just simply biding their time because there's not anywhere else to go, and their child's friends would be so disruptive to move them somewhere else, and they're not happy. They're just kind of stuck. And that would sound like a quote I've heard: "We moved from a city with many options for schools. Your school is the best there is in our community, but there are many things we wish were different." In other words, if something else came along, believe me, we wouldn't be here anymore. Thanks for the vote of confidence, consumer parents. So we all have these parents, and I've been, this was an interesting year at Ambrose for us. Kurt Vanderleest stepped in when David Goodwin became the new president of the Association of Classical Christian Schools. Kurt, who had been on our board, stepped in and is the new head of school. And so I said, Kurt, this is the perfect opportunity for us to do something really dramatic, kind of a Jim Collins, big, hairy, audacious goal. What if, even though the Ambrose School in its 20th year, with 500-plus students and 300-plus families, what if we tried to actually meet with every single father? Because the fathers are the most difficult to go after. And I'll talk a little bit why that's the case. So we decided that we would begin to work through this process. And so we said, well, let's make a list. What are these inherent challenges that are affecting these 4 different categories of families in our schools? And what can we put together that might really impact them? And I should say, too, as you think about, if you can imagine a graph with believers is sort of on the left side, and it kind of moves through the stages of participant, enthusiast, and consumer, I think the years of the school's existence also affect where you find your parents. So if you're in a school, let me just ask you, if you're in a school that's only been in existence for 5 years or less, Show me if you're okay. I've been in those schools, yes. Okay, and I would say that 0 to 5, you probably have more believers and enthusiasts because you've got, or participants, because you've just got people that they're not going to show up for something new unless they've really had a deeply vested interest in it. But as the school moves forward, and so how many of you are in kind of year 5 to 15 years of existence? Where are you? Wow, that's, I think, the majority. And how many of you are 15 or more? So it's kind of evenly divided. Obviously, if you're 15 or more, you're also in the other categories. Anyway, I would say that's something that just keep in mind. Where is your school in terms of its season of existence? Because as you get older, you're going to find more of parents moving simply into the enthusiast consumer category. And I think the size of the school is also a part of that. If you're in a school that's, let's say, just again, hand raised, under 150 students. You get under 150? Okay. And how many of you have more than 150? The rest of you, obviously. Okay. The under 150, again, it's a tight community just simply by reality of the school. And I've been in a school in Atlanta that was under 150, and we had a pretty naturally tight community. And parents had to show up to volunteer because you had no staff member resources. So some of that natural just doing life together builds connectivity, builds parents who are more of a believer and participant mindset. When the school gets larger and the tendency is you drop the kids off at carpool and you have a much more robust administration, it's easy for the school to become a place that is much more at a distance in terms of the parent to the school. So just these are inherent challenges. So as Kirk and I are talking about, what are we going to do? What are the challenges? We started talking about some things that, again, no surprise. I just want to mention some of these before we get into kind of what this case study looked like. One of them is just simply time. I don't know of another business model that is more challenging than running a classical Christian school. I mean, most other businesses, name anything from your dry cleaner to, you know, someone who's building homes, you tend to have a much more closer relationship between the business and the customer. And we have this strange triangulation where there's the parent who's writing the tuition check, and then there's us who's delivering the goods, but you've got this little adolescent in the middle full of hormones and emotions that sort of brokers all of this for us. And so the time that we have with our parents is unbelievably little. Corporate America, I've heard it said you should repeat your vision every 30 days. God figured out that you should probably better show back up at church about every 7 days because you're going to wander off. And yet somehow we think in the school business we can launch this amazing enterprise in which we're forming human souls 180 days out of the year, and yet we only actually look eyeball to eyeball with the parents somewhere in the fall at a back-to-school night maybe, or occasionally at a parent-teacher conference, or maybe we'll come to the picnic thing. And that's probably going to be even more the moms than the dads, because the dads tend to have the attitude that, hey, and I'll get to this in a bit, there's a little bit of the, well, mom, you know, divide and conquer mindset. Mom's going to run school stuff, and dad will be over here. And so we have this kind of time problem with how do we really get join up as an organization. Secondly, as we talked about it, we've got a very misunderstood model. And I know that in talking about classical Christian education, it's like saying I'm a Christian or I go to church, because we could go around the room right now and there is many different iterations of classical Christian education as there are people in the room probably. And I mean, there's lots of points of commonality, but it's not like we're the Waldorf school or the Ambleside schools and there's sort of a fixed franchise model. And so there's this misunderstood model of what we're even trying to do on any given day in the eyes of the parent or even in the eyes of some of our administration and staff. And similar to that would be competing visions. And so one of the things that's interesting, in Atlanta, we were a heritage preparatory school. We used that term in our title, which meant parents would come with some expectation that we were preparing them for college. And then we moved out to Boise, and we're the Ambrose School. And the Ambrose School is kind of, we're not a college prep school. Now, that doesn't mean we're anti-college. We're just not, we believe that's the domain of the parent. And while we do have a college advisor, we're definitely more in the mindset of we're working with a parent. But you get these mixed objectives. Parents come in, and they want to know, you know, give me the list of the top colleges kids are getting into. And you get another subset of parents. They're like, I don't even want them to go to college because I put all my money in your school, by the way, for $80,000. But we just want them to, you know, have a good life. And it's like, what do you guys want, objectively, parents, for us to deliver for you to feel a sense of success? And are we a family school in which every kid gets to come? Are we fencing at the door stay-nine scores and we're going to have a certain subset of... All of these things have to be figured out, these competing visions. That creates tension with the parents and misunderstanding, potentially. And then with the in loco parentis, or I like to call it the loco parentheses, how do we partner with these people? And that's us. I'm a dad. I can say that. I get it. But it is, again, a very lofty, beautiful thing in Loco Parentis. And then you look at the typical home today and what's going on in it and how much is really happening that's developing and building up. We've got fourth graders showing up with smartphones and the parents just figure that's normal. Or we put screens in their bedrooms, or we allow certain things to be seen, or we, you know, have the DVD player and the carpool line playing. It's like, are we all on the same page here? And yet we're supposed to be underused in some very important way. We are, and that's important. But how do we communicate that? And then just finally, again, no surprise, the speed of our culture. We're trying to do something that is done best when the world's not moving at Mach 8. And we have such a, not only do we have, as I mentioned, just the limited time together physically, but we have a culture that makes parents very intolerable, I think, to the idea of deeply reading. As George Grant said this morning, this isn't the education most of us grew up with. And so you fire off the typical classical Christian school headmaster notes that say, you know, 5 pages long of a wonderful treaty on something. Nobody's reading it. Nobody's thinking about it. And so how do we indoctrinate, connect, resource them when they're moving so fast? An interesting quote, Daniel Levitin in The Guardian in January of this year wrote an article on why the modern world is bad for your brain. He says, in the days of old, if the phone rang, we were busy. We either didn't answer it or we turned the ringer off. When all phones were wired to a wall, there was no expectation of being able to reach us at all times. One might have gone for a walk or have been between places. And so if someone couldn't reach you or didn't feel like, or you didn't feel like being reached, it was considered normal. Now more people have mobile phones than have toilets. So I just came from Africa 4 days ago. That is definitely true, especially in that country. There is a real challenge with speed of our culture. So again, you came to the workshop not to be told. You already know this. But these are things that are deeply challenging for us to be partnering with parents in the role of shaping the next generation. I would also say, as we go forward, let me get jump to the next point. So the school versus home versus church. We talk a lot about this in Ambrose, and I think there's a lot of, again, unresolved tension that's there. For years, I was a pastor in local church ministry, and we always had suspicion of parachurch people because they weren't really for the church. And now I'm in the school world, and it's sort of like, well, there's, okay, God instituted the home and the church, but the school thing kind of came later. So the church can't be, or the school can't be a church, but I'm, so it's like this, when all systems are online, it's this beautiful paideia, the three-legged stool. All three institutions are all working together, and it's beautiful. The challenge is, as we know and as we're saying, sometimes those legs are missing. You either have parents that are not involved, and there's not a lot we can do to fix the home life extensively, or you have a church that's wonderful. And I, again, go church. It's 2 hours a week, and we've got 16,000 hours between kindergarten and 12th grade to be influencing. So how do we figure out where those boundaries are? And that's been a real struggle for us at Ambrose, because do we play the role of church when we shouldn't be, and when do we turn to the pastor and say, please pick up from here, we need your help, or parent, we really need you involved in this way. So all of these intricacies of working in alignment are so critical. And yet again, in a school environment where we rarely see each other, how in the world do we convey that this needs to be happening? And then moving forward, other challenges, as we kind of throw all these things up on the whiteboard, what else is going on that makes it challenging to work with our parents today? Another is just the entitlement mindset. Can I hear an amen? Yes, we all know this. Part of it is also the reality is I'm facing the reality that I'm getting older. And I'm realizing that some of these parents are not showing up with kids for kindergarten, or like the people that were in my youth group, you know, a few years ago. And the 20-somethings are in a very different frame of mind of the way the world works and what they should expect. I remember at Heritage in Atlanta when we began, again, back to first true believers start a new school up, we had parents that were really gung-ho and involved. They were reading to their kids, and they were doing the flashcards, and they were working in the evenings. And now, fast forward to this 20-something generation. Again, I'm stereotyping, but there's some truths in here. There's more of a sense of, hey, look, I dropped my dry cleaning off earlier. They're going to take care of that for me. I've got the oil change going on here for my car. And oh, by the way, I'll drop my kid off and pick him up. What do you mean? I've got to do something at home? You mean what? Other than feed him? I mean, really? And so there's this very, I'm being a bit facetious, but there is a different understanding of the generations of what is being expected, and this idea of outsourcing everything. I actually had a colleague in Atlanta who had been in Christian education for 20 years, and just a few years ago he said to me, after heading a very successful large Christian school in Atlanta, he said, you know what, I'm retiring. I'm done. I'm too young to retire, but I can't do this anymore. And he said, in the last 20 years, the change on the part of parents in terms of their orientation towards me and the school has changed from a respect towards the authority of the school to a constant complaining sense in which, what have you done for me lately and how come things aren't right and my child is perfect. And he said, it is so notably different in the last 2 decades that it's just beyond me to be able to service the current families that we have. So, we're all in this. We're parents too, but there is a very challenging reality where the culture is taking parents. Even God-fearing, church-going parents, this is a reality. How do we work with entitlement mindsets? And then the next one I would say is a challenge, last two are gender role assumptions. And by that, what I mean is simply this. We have, as I alluded to a moment ago, we have a culture, biblical culture, in which we believe the father is to be the head of the house. Very anti-cultural view of things, but I think most classical Christian parents would say, hey, dad, you're kind of you're a spiritual leader in your home. And in many cases, historically in classical Christian schools, mom has been able to stay home and dad has kind of worked. And what we're seeing now is, again, a change, just economic differences, dual working homes. And also with that, this legacy issue is kind of dads typically think, mom, that's your domain. Like, don't come to me unless there's a huge discipline problem or something unethical happened or the tuition payment didn't go through. Generally, mom's going to take care of it. And that's one of the reasons we felt like we really need to go after the dads. Dads, you really do need to be owning the formation of the soul of your child. And that is what we're doing, by the way. We're not just giving them an education, getting them through the SAT. So how do you come against this? Again, very difficult if you only see each other in the carpool line or once in the blue moon. And then the last thing was sort of, I call this administrative bias. And I think as we've talked about at Ambrose, what is our attitude towards the parents? And I know in talking to different heads of schools and other principals, administrators, there are very different attitudes about what the role is of parents in the school. And maybe you're wherever you are on the spectrum, and it ranges from, it's almost homeschool co-op mindset, like I need them right there doing homework every night, volunteering in the classroom, vacuuming after school, all the way to please do not show up on my property other than your tuition check and I'll see you at graduation. And somewhere in there is where we fall. And if you're in a school, and I've seen it in classical Christian schools, where it's very much a, we're the professional, thank you for dropping your children off. We do have things you need to do at home, but really we don't need you in the office, we don't need you in the hallway, and we really just need you to go and take care of your matters and we'll take care of ours. Again, being a little harsh, but there's a little of that mindset. And if you work with an administration that says, parents, you need to be over here, you're going to innately continue to build walls that make it difficult to get their full engagement. So with all of those pressures kind of going on, what in the world can we do? And so Kurt Vanderlee and I said, all right, let's try something a little crazy this year. Let's actually try to meet with all of these fathers. When I've been at Heritage in Atlanta, I had a couple of variations on this idea. At one point, we were about to launch a capital campaign, so I said, okay, I need 30 minutes with every dad in the school. And so we set it up where right after carpool, hey, dads, just come in the building for 30 minutes. We're going to kind of share with you the vision of what we're doing, give you some coffee, send you back out. And that actually worked pretty well. Dads were like, I got 30 minutes. I already got to drop my kid off. I'll just come and see what you guys have to say. So that worked. And I thought, what could we do to kind of take this to the next level? And so the idea was, as we began to look through this, what could we do to really get into each one of these fathers' minds and get quality time with them? I will tell you kind of the end of the story, and I'll come back to it. This is the best thing that I think I've done professionally in my administrative role at the school. And I think Kirk would say the same. This was unbelievable. We ended up having 57 meetings since January, and I'll get into the results of all of this, but this time with these fathers was really, really remarkable. So what did this look like? What is he talking about? Well, I've kind of given you a sense of what the needs are, just getting face-to-face with the dads. How did we actually do that? What did the logistics look like? So what we figured out was we had roughly 300 families, and even if you're a small school, it's even easier for you. We had 300 families, 300 dads, so we divided up how many dads is that per meeting. If we didn't want no more than about 5 in a meeting, because we didn't want too few, we didn't want too many, so 5 seemed to be the optimal number. It worked out to about 70 meetings. We're like, oh, what are we doing? And then we thought, okay, well, we got to make it where there's no excuses. So we said, okay, we're going to do 3 in the morning, so kind of post-carpool. So drop your kid off, come in, into our conference room. You're going to meet with us. 3 options. Okay, you can't do morning. Okay, fine. Guess what? We'll do one at lunch on Tuesdays. We have a lunch option. And then you just are completely so busy you can't even make that. We'll be here every Tuesday night. So we locked and loaded for 4 months. Like, that's our commitment. We're going to be here 5 times a week, and we're just going to make this thing happen. We then found, the next challenge is, how in the world are we going to schedule this? I mean, this is like going to be a nightmare for our administration. You know, our administrator, you know, phone call, hey, Dad, I need to change my schedule. We found a tool that I'd recommend to you called Calendly, Calendly.com. Really goofy name, Calendly, Calendly.com. And it's a free service. And basically what it is, we literally loaded up all of the dates all, 5 times a week for 4 months. Here's every possible time slot. Sent the email out to the dads. Click the link. It goes back in, and guess what, Dad? Get your calendar out. The world is available to you. Pick a slot. My goodness, can you find 45 minutes in the next 4 months to sign up to come meet with the new headmaster of the school and the administrative team, or just Kirk and I, the two of us? And I'm thinking, what dad's going to say no to this? We've removed any schedule barrier to them. We've insisted that this is important. And then we began to broadcast widely. Every single event where one of us was in front of the, you know, whether it was one of our chapel exilium times or in our weekly newsletter, it's like, hey, Dad, you will be here. And we kind of had fun with the No Dad Left Behind thing. We really pushed this hard everywhere we went. And by the way, the other thing we did, because we recognized the moms would be like, wait a minute, you guys are going to tell all the great stuff to the dads, what about us? So we said, fine, we can't possibly do 70 meetings with all the moms. So we just decided to do these mom coffees. And we set up about 10 of them. The idea was we could handle up to groups of about 40 at a time. And there's the same exact message. We just did it with the moms. And oh, by the way, another little thing we realized as we were getting started, we really need to do this for our teachers and our faculty, because they're going to be like, wait a minute, you guys are telling all the updates and the secrets to the, that we don't know. So we went to the faculty meetings and we shared. So everybody was on board with what we were doing, caught the vision for it. And then we began to promote it like crazy. And we met at our conference room. So what was the format? So once a dad finally arrived, what did this thing look like? Well, we had it in our conference room. You can have it in any room. You know, it was set up to be, you know, a serious meeting time. They walked in. They had pens and little notepads. And we gave everybody a little coffee bar at our school. So we said, hey, we'll get you any beverage you want, espresso or whatever. We just made them feel real great hospitality as they walked in. Typical dads walk in, and they're kind of like, this has got to be a fundraising thing. This is my child. Why are we really having this meeting? And it was like, no, everybody relax. Dads, let me give you the agenda, because you're going to want to know. It's dad being the agenda. So he said, hey, it's real simple. We're going to share with you some updates on the school. We joked, hey, we're under new management with a new head of school. You might want to actually meet and hear from the guy. We've got some exciting things going on in the building we're going to share with you. But really, we need your feedback. So first thing I want you to know is you go around the room. Tell me a little bit about yourself. How long have you been here? Tell me about your kids. And what question do you, or maybe your wife sent you with a question, what would you like us to look at while we're here? And like, wow. So we would go around, everyone would introduce themselves to one another. And then we would have an opportunity to really get into the what we call the SWOT analysis, which is really just, let me just share with you, since we are, oh, by the way, in this together is a community, what are the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats going on in our school right now? And so Kirk would begin by just saying, he gave about 7 or 8 touch points of things that are really amazing and positive happening at the school. Things that were everything from just teacher retention to the addition of concurrent credit classes to our year in giving report to just some big success points for the school. We were in the midst of adding another classroom on the building, and some parents wanted to kind of update on that. So just positive, school's growing, things are going well. Our 19 seniors will soon be 40 seniors because the class is growing up, et cetera, et cetera. And then I turned and said, okay, really the heart of this conversation needs to be around two things. One is communication. I need to hear from you, dads. How do we communicate with you better? Because we recognize pretty quickly that is one of the most difficult things is communication. I had one dad said to me, great feedback. He said, hey, you realize I have 5 kids at the school, and do you realize that for every child I have administration and teachers and homeroom parent and he said, I have 35 emails from your school a day. And that's great on the one hand, but it's a little much. Like, could you help me with that? I'm like, sure, let me help you with that. So we began to unearth, and I'll tell you more and more, just all of these discoveries that we were making. And so I said, Dad, tell me, how do we communicate with you better in terms of just sheer, you know, is it email? Is it a phone call? How do we get up with you? And then how do you connect better to us? Because we'd have dads that would sit in there and say, hey, you know, back in the day, I was the dad that brought the bookshelves in, and I remember doing that, and other dads were brand new. And so you had this interesting opportunity for them to share questions that they had about where's the school going and what's happening. But it's all around how do we communicate better, how do we connect with you? And so we'd have this rich conversation on connecting. And you'd have dad saying things like, you know, I would love to, maybe we should do a camping trip, or, you know, I love cooking. Why don't we do a barbecue and people come to my house? Or what if we did this? Or what if we did that? And they're talking it up to one another about ideas and ways that they can connect and communicate that made sense for them. And again, I'll give you kind of in the results section some of the things that we learned that were really, really interesting. But just in terms of kind of the format of the meetings, it was very much a conversation and very much inviting them to share what's on their mind. And of the 57 meetings, it ran the gamut. And again, I'll give you results in terms of where the conversation went based on the input and the questions that they had. As we were structuring these meetings, one other thing I'll mention that was kind of in my mind, and the HBDI stands for the Herman Brain Dominance in the Index. Herman Brain, if you just Google HBDI, what you'll see, or you'll see a graph like this, and it's kind of years ago somebody showed this to me, I've always thought about it whenever I'm presenting or doing any kind of discussion, and the idea is that we as humans are wired very differently, and if you are someone who's very analytical and logical and fact-based, kind of like in the A quadrant, and you're running a meeting, you're probably going to make the content very fact-based, analytical, and quantitative. And that's great for the percentage of dads, in this case, that were showing up at the meeting that wanted the facts. Like, how are we doing financially? Are we in the red? Are we in the black? Are we okay? Where are we? They want facts. You know, what percentage are going to what college? What kind of financial aid are we getting? They want that stuff. But if that's the whole meeting, we would have missed three-quarters of the wiring of the dads that came to the meeting. Same thing with the moms. And so the other would be, you know, the form B, bottom left, sequential, organized, detailed, and planned. These are people who want more planning. Like, where are we going, long-term strategy? Future D has got some of that, but they're more of a kind of intuitive, integrating, synthesizing data the way their brain works. And then the feeling group is more the emotional. These people love the stories. So when you have the roundtables, as we call these, the 90-day, 90-dad roundtables, we had to make sure we were kind of hitting all cylinders here, that the analytical dad wasn't getting lost in sweet little stories, and the sweet little story dad who got his fix from that wasn't blurry-eyed when we started pulling out the statistics. So we just want to make sure we were hitting everybody's wiring needs as we put the talk together. And then again, I mentioned this idea of we really pushed the no dad left behind. And it was interesting as we got rolling, the number of moms that would go home and go, you need to go. The content was amazing that we heard in the mom's coffee, and you really need to hear this. Or other dads would call their dads and go, no, it's really not a sales thing. They really do want to hear what you have to say. You should come. So it built momentum as it went along. So what were the rewards of all of this? What was the fruit? And actually, maybe before I go into that, I was going to take a minute. I've been talking a mile a minute. Any questions about the format or the structure or how we went about doing this? Yes, sir. 45 minutes. Yeah, 45 minutes. And that was very important that we honored that time. And we would end every 45 minutes with a word of prayer. And then probably half the time, we would schedule it where we would be available afterwards. And half the time, people would stay after. And as you can imagine, for some people, that's when the real question would come out. But it was okay. So, yes, sir. Did some meetings go poorly? I'll talk about that here in just a minute. Good question. Yes. No, so good question. So every single meeting, I was at it, and then Kirk Van Gogh. So Kirk and I, we were always there, the two of us. Board members came as parents, and board members came, and we had teachers that would come. Again, some of them were parents, and like the dean of our upper school was probably in 10 of them, would just come and be a part of it, just to kind of listen and hear, which was fine. Yeah. Other questions? Okay. Like we told the dads, there's no dumb questions, so it's really okay. All right, so, yeah, yes, sir. Yes, thank you that's a great question. Yes, and that is definitely, we did have single moms, and so we purposely, the roundtables, or the coffees, as we call them, for the moms, they were invited to that. The content was the same, but we would actually personally reach out to them and just say, you are invited to be a part of this, and yes, we did want to be sensitive to that. Yeah. Okay, so the rewards. Well, the rewards were abundant, and again, I'm not exaggerating. It was one of those things that we thought, why didn't we think of this long, long before now? I had assumed, kind of going into this, the old Pareto, 80% would come and 20% would be hard to get in the door, and I figured there'd be the 20%. I figured there'd be a percentage that we just could never get in. But what happened, and I'll tell you, I'm a little bit surprised, maybe a little disappointed when all was settled, despite genuinely valiant efforts. I mean, I don't know how a dad in the building could have not known about this. I mean, all the way down, even our auction where we were on the stage, we're promoting everything. It's like, oh, by the way, you need to come to this. We had within, so from January when we started until March, we were completely full with five people per meeting. And this Calendly thing worked brilliantly. Dads would go online, they'd pick a slot, and then it would show that one's full. They'd go to this one. They just loaded it up. So every meeting pretty much, January to March, there were at least five dads. We'd even have dads going, hey, can I sneak into this one? And once in a while we had six. I'm like, this thing's awesome. We're so successful. This is going to be great. You know. And then comes March, and we kind of crossed over about 50%. The whole time, one of our administrative assistants is tracking in an online version of Excel all of the names of the fathers, the grades they're in, whether they're, you know, whether it's a broken home situation, every detail, and we had that in there, and we could see when they were when they had signed up and when they had actually attended, because there were a few, it was very few actually, who would not make it to an appointment, partially because the Calendly program was so successful at sending them periodic reminders leading up to it, and then if they needed to change, they just click and jump to a different date. So that really helped with just no-shows. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, it's like calendar. It's CALENDLY.com. Calendly. I would have never named it that, but that's what they picked. So, at any rate, by March, we were at 50%, and I'm looking at now it's getting kind of scattered in the future meetings. And it's like two here and three there. I'm like, oh, time to put some pressure on. So I began, again, yes, this takes time. I began to go through that Excel list where we were missing dads, and I literally would get the directory out, and I may not, some of them I don't know at the school 300, and I'm writing a personal email. Dear Bob, hope you're doing well. So glad little Susie's in our third grade. Wanted to make sure you're aware of. Here's this meeting. Click here for the updates. And it would work, because I sent out 12 personal emails, and within 24 hours, I had six of those dads signed up. So these are not people that don't want to come. They're just busy. And so it took a lot of hand-holding to get the next 30% across. So between March, late March and early April, we picked up another, we were right around the 65%, let's say, number of dads that had actually come to the meeting or were scheduled to come through. And then the last 20% to 30%, it was harder than I thought. And in fact, we were still, when all the dust settled, and we ran out of time, May happened when school year ended, we were at 27% that did not make it. And that was disappointing. Some of them I know are literally situations where dad works in another state and they're just very difficult. Although I'm still like, for goodness sakes, I gave you 4 months and five meetings a week, did you find something? So it was a little bit kind of cynical. But anyway, so it said a lot to me. Just that says a lot to me. So if I've got 27% of my fathers that cannot make it to a meeting where they're paying tuition for their child to meet with a new administration of their school, I mean, like, what do you go to? I mean, it just was very telling to me. And we have a great school. I mean, really, it's positive. But I'm just thinking, then I'm thinking as a development guy, oh, well, I wonder how well they're reading that little colorful annual fund brochure I sent to them. I'm sure they're excited about that. And they're writing a check right away. You know, or how about the fact that, you know, why aren't they showing up to the parent-teacher conferences? So it was a huge just pulse check on the overall health of the school. Like, where are these people when they've been directly invited to come and be a part of it? So it's been a slow pull to kind of go after them. And I would say, you know, check back with me next year at the conference. We're not done with this yet. We're going after that 27%. And Kirk and I are like, if we have to show up at your law office and bring you coffee, we will be there. We're going to figure out where you are, because we're in loco parentis, and you've got to get involved here, my friend. So we're going after them. But just as we look at it right now, statistically, in the dust of them, we ended up with 57 meetings. It's 72% of the parents showing up. What's interesting, too, is we were running the statistics of the numbers of, like, you would expect, again, back to true believers, kindergarten parents, I just knew this was going to happen. Guess what it did? 81%, which actually is surprising, 81% of the kindergarten fathers would show up. Now, part of it, where were the others? Well, part of it's because they have five kids and their oldest is in high school and they completely figure they get it. But the new ones, for sure. So we went from 81% in kindergarten, and by the time we got to ninth grade, was at 56%. But then there were some anomalies. Like, we had 10th grade shot back up to 70%. So it just kind of depended, but on the whole, on average, 72% of the whole school, of the fathers, made it to our meetings. The moms, again, much less push. It was in the newsletters. It was more casually presented. We ended up with 10 meetings, and we had about 55% of the moms showing up for that. And again, I think it just was a matter of not pushing it that hard. And I think this entire model could be done around the moms. And in fact, I'll get to in a minute some of the things we're thinking about what's next. So that was kind of just the base result of who made it to these events. Let me talk a little bit about what the rewards were in terms of what the fruit that was born from all this effort. First of all, what I would call the engagement gap. We literally had fathers that I'm not sure were in the building, had been in the building other than maybe to drop off a kid's lunch or some casual encounter point. They really were not a part of the everyday flow of the school. And what was so exciting was to have them in these meetings. And countless times fathers would leave and they would say, I'll be honest with you, I didn't want to go. My wife maybe, like that says a lot. And then they would say, I really appreciate this. This was so helpful. I had no idea. I'm really encouraged. And it was a wonderful just in closing the gap between those that are not the disenfranchised or disillusioned yet, but those who are just sort of in that staggered middle that really need to be brought in. And so, again, a lot of what we were talking about was getting them connected, and I'll share with you more of this. The second thing for sure that was a big help was kind of names and faces. And you saw the photos a moment ago. I concluded every meeting by saying, hey, let's take a quick photo. And no one objected. The moms had some issues with it. But the dads were fine with doing that. And part of it, to be honest, was just simply, I am not gifted. I wish the Lord would, if you're an administrator, you should have like a brain that sears in on every single face in the building. I don't have that gift. And so with 300 dads buzzing around and moms, wow, I've got like, I've joked about making baseball cards for our dads. It's like, I know who you are and your stats are on the back. All that. But it was a very helpful tool. I've got a photo now of, you know, at least 72% of all of our fathers. And it's helped me a ton just with names and face recognition just by doing that. A big value of this was what I would kind of call demographic and psychographic discoveries. And by demographic, I'm just getting a sense of what's going on in the minds of a kindergarten family. I mentioned this just a moment ago. This is something that, it was really interesting. In Ambrose, just give you an example of one of the things that came out that I would have never probably known otherwise. It was a high-level sensitivity point. And that is that this 20-somethings, this fear of elitism. And I think it's probably very much geographical, depending on where you are in the country. I came from Atlanta, the old South. It's like we actually want a private school because it looks elitist. That makes us feel better about ourselves. Maybe that. You go to Idaho, it's still Chevrolet Apple Pie and public school. And like anything that even looks slightly like you're doing well financially or you have any kind of a nice looking school, or why in the world would you put wood trim up in your school? That seems unnecessary. You know, very utilitarian mindset. This idea of elitism kept coming up, and it seemed like more and more dads would just say, you know, I love her school, but I gotta tell you, I'm a little concerned. I actually saw a BMW in the parking lot, and it really, I'm serious. And I'm looking, I'm like, really? What did it run into you? Like, what was the problem with it? I mean, so they were concerned because part of this 20-something generation, they're very much into kind of social well-being and caring for the needs of others. I mean, that's great. I'm talking about Christian folks. That's great. And yet there was a sensitivity there that we needed to be careful. So we began to, as we're building this addition to the building, it caused us to realize we need to just be sensitive to this. We need to recognize that they don't want a hoity-toity private school. They want a salt of the earth, Christ-centered school, which is great. And they want to make sure that we're being really good stewards, that when we're adding on and we're putting in wood trim, it's not because we're going to be ostentatious. It's because we believe in truth, goodness, and beauty. We want the building to reflect that. So we started nuancing based on the demographic and psychographics that I wasn't that sensitive to, because I'm operating in my office on things that I think make sense to the world in my 40-something world. But to them, half my age, this is a very different way to see the world. And so that was so helpful just to hear what are their concerns and what are the things that are weighing on them. Another positive was what I would just call strengthening the immune system of the school. And that was just simply the old idea, like in marriage, they talk about you got to make more deposits than you do withdrawals. But lots of deposits were made in these meetings. And in many cases, the deposits were just simply them catching a vision of the school itself. If you think about it, a typical grammar school parent, if that's their siloed world, they have very little awareness or interest in what's happening in the upper school. It's just natural life that way. And so we were able to strengthen their immune system, so to speak, so that knowing that there's this trajectory that you choose the school because it's sweet, safe, kindergarten, Christian, classical thing, okay, great. Now all of a sudden they go to third grader. Now they've got a fifth grader. Oh, wait, middle school, I don't know if we want to be here for middle school, because that, and to my quote, this idea of, my kid's all about science and STEM program. You guys must not have much of that going, because you really are just humanities, right? And for us to be able to say in these meetings, let me tell you what's happening in our high school. Let's talk about the fact that we are increasing the strength of our math and science program. And let me share with you some of the results of the national merit finalists that we've had, and how well we're actually doing, and compared to, we just kind of laid it all out there and cast a vision for our upper school. And so it helps boost the immune system, if you will, of those rising grammar school parents or dads and moms that would have, the question hadn't even arrived yet. But they had their tetanus shot before they found the rusty nail, so to speak. It was happening early, and I think that was very rich. I'd also mention one of the points that I'm about to get to on cross-pollinization. I'll just go ahead and just kind of make that point. That so often the strength of these meetings was not what I was saying or Kirk was saying. It was what the parents were saying to each other. We're a generation of, we don't buy anything on Amazon unless we've read the reviews. Reviews matter. So to have other dads say to other dads, this is a good thing, was very powerful. And I'll talk more about that in a second. Gaining credibility, this is also something that we heard quite often, was dads looking at myself or at Kirk, our head of school, and saying, I can't believe you guys are taking the time to meet with us. Like, wow. Not that we're royalty in their mind, but just in so many schools, there's this untouchable class of the administration that you really only get to see when something bad's going on. And so for us to be proactive and coming alongside and making the time to listen, to ask questions, was very meaningful. And again, back to a deposit, they just thought, man, you really care. You care about my family. And you care about me, and you want to know what's going on. Thank you for that. So when we do call them in the office in 6 months, we're not the straight. We have a little bit more credibility in their eyes. That you really do care about me, even though you're about to expel my child. But thank you for letting me get to know you initially. And then to this point I was just making about cross-pollinization, I can't tell you, this was probably the best part of the whole thing. There were many times where we would kind of get the meeting going, and the dads would go around and sharing some questions they had. Before we even got beyond the question section, I remember one meeting. And by the way, this is another genius thing of how this thing works. Providentially, and I would definitely cast it that way. We never arranged who was at the meeting with who was there with the other, who was with who. You just had this cross-section of fathers that signed up electronically, didn't know the names of who else was going to be in the meeting. And they would all appear, and you'd get this fascinating kind of randomizer going on. So you'd get the, I remember this one meeting where you had a brand new, we accepted them late, it was like they came in November, brand new half-day kindergartner dad, and you had a dad of a last student of three graduating in about 4 months. Like the most extreme opposites of the entire of the school. And they were in this meeting, and then you had several others, and there was one dad that was there who said, with this kind of dejected, broken look, he just said, I got to be honest with you guys, my wife's not a believer. We are really struggling right now. She is really pushing hard that after grammar school, we go to some other school. I'm not sure what I think about it. I'm kind of leaning towards maybe thinking that's what we should do. I'm not sure. And it was like, these other dads just like, hold on, you're making a bad decision. Let me tell you what you need to think about. And they just started going, and I'm just like, roll the video camera. This is unbelievable. Like, I can't make a brochure that sells as well as what I'm watching in front of me. And sure enough, that dad walked out of there kind of emblazoned to go home and say, you know what? My dear wife is not a believer. That's a whole other story. But I really think this is where we need to be. And here's why. And that came from the cross-pollinization of other parents or other dads that were encouraging along the way. Now, the question was asked, cross-pollinization, there's a risk, and I'll talk about risk, but, you can also have the negative effect, where you get the curmudgeon grumbler in there, and he's like, well, I'll tell you what I really think about your school, and you've got the kindergarten dad going, that happened. I mean, generally, people have enough common decency not to go in and torch your meeting, I mean, unless they just really have a bone to pick. We didn't have anybody that came with, pitchfork and torch just to absolutely, destroy it. We did have some motor mouth dads, and that was a separate problem. That just, they must work from home, and they haven't seen another adult in a while. I'm like, thank you for that 10-minute question you had. Now let's go on to the other dads. So we had some of that, managing people kind of thing. There were concerns, and we tried to politely address issues. I mean, nobody that I can think of brought up like my child, has a bad experience with this teacher, and here's what I want to work at. It wasn't like there was more general questions like concerns about, the future of is the math program what it needs to be, or or just general frustrations with smaller things. And again, some of that we just moved offline very politely, and those would be the, hey, can you just, would you mind staying after? We got some great material we get through. We'll be glad to talk to you about that, and we just politely moved it off. And I think most dads, I don't know of any negative polarization if you were with somebody who was all fired up, a believer, and walk out of there as a consumer going, that was horrible. I didn't get that. Let me move on to the other, another great reward for this is kind of landmine detection, as I would call it. And again, this again goes back to, I would have never guessed some of the things that these dads kept coming up with that were really concerns about, concerns they had. For instance, like, why don't we have a school counselor? And I'm thinking, because we're in loco parentis and you are supposed to be counseling at home, but you... So how did, what did that mean? Well, they wanted somebody, they're not, we have a college advisor as a larger school, but they wanted, you know, a lot of schools they see, again, we're judged by what they see in other schools. Why don't you have, you know, an onboard psychologist ready to address all the needs of our children? I'm like, well, because we have your church and we have you and we're partnering with you and that's what we need you to be doing. And so untangling that, or the dads that wanted to know, you know, I'm really concerned about security. You know, we don't have a, how are you going to handle it if this happens? And what about that? And what about this? And hey, great, let's talk about our, some things that we have in place with regards to security. And that was, again, we'll probably never put that in a newsletter, but it was something that was interesting to hear. Tuition. This past year, we made a pretty painful, we thought it was going to be painful, 9% bump in our tuition. We did it because we, the board said, look, we've got to get teacher compensation to a certain point over the next 3 years. We've got to kind of on-ramp up to here. We're also going to boost up financial aid in a way that we've never done before. That was one of the big talking points. That was so, again, back to kind of predicting what would be a landmine, hearing from parents' concerns about tuition. And saying, oh, here's what it's about. It's not about us building the building, because we had parents that assumed you're building a building and you went up on tuition. That's what you're doing. Again, you're putting unnecessary woodwork up. No, that money, by the way, was all raised separately. The tuition is only going to help with operations or operational costs related to the teachers. And dads were like, oh, got it. Great. Thank you. I'm on board now. Again, landmine that could have festered if we hadn't had a chance to have a forum to talk about it. So college prep, carpool, you'd be amazed again at the things that get you that are just, you know, here we are working out the finer nuances of the Project Masnada, and they want to know, like, how come the gold line is faster than the blue line? And how come you guys don't stop the mom that stops and leaves the car and goes in, and now we have to work around in this traffic thing? I'm like, oh, the little things kill you. So we heard all that, and it was very, very helpful, the landmines. So as we looked at this kind of whole project, I do want to talk about some of the risks, because I'm sure you're thinking, that sounds great, but I bet there's some things that this could have really worked against you. One of the risks, for sure, is time. And I think for a lot of you listening to this going, man, you guys have a big administration. I'm glad you've got time to go do all that. I do not have time to meet with every dad. There's no way that's going to happen. I would challenge you in that. I really think that it's one of those, you're making deposits. Maybe the format's not 5, maybe it's 10, 15, whatever it is, but just the base structure of this, of making yourself available to share in a more intimate setting, to listen to your constituents, will bear enormous fruit, and yet there's a risk of time. But I would contend, how much time does it take when you have the parent that comes off the rails, and they're calling you, and they're back in your office, 5 different meetings over the course of the school year for 15 hours, or whatever it is? Be preemptive, and I think that is a worthwhile risk. The other would be the risk of the over-empowering the customer. Where am I? Over-empowering the customer, which by that I would say, this is the dad that says, you know, 6 months later, don't you remember that meeting where I told you about that I don't like this part of the uniform? Or remember I expressed to you my concern about the math program and I assumed you'd taken care of that? Now, why is it that that hasn't been done? Because remember we had that meeting? You're going, no, that wasn't the purpose of the meeting. So there's a risk, I think, of, and I think some administrators might say, well, you're giving too much power to the people, and you're giving them too much access to you. And now, by the way, they can stop by next Thursday and feel comfort in just stopping by because you have a relationship with them. Before, you were sort of in the ivory tower. Perhaps. But I think I'd rather have that risk of being an accessible administrator than an ivory tower administrator that can't get near them. And I think they can understand that, no, I didn't promise you we were going to change uniforms because your daughter doesn't like them. That wasn't what we talked about. And this idea of collateral damage, which again we talked about, was the parent who just spoils it for the other one sitting there. That really was not, I never saw significant collateral damage. I saw what I thought was probably reasonable concerns brought up that actually, again, for that starry-eyed kindergarten dad went, oh, that I hadn't even thought about safety in school. Okay, I'm glad to know you guys, oh, now I understand carpool. Oh, I get this. So again, it helped him invest deeply into the process. And then I would just kind of wind the time down. I do want to, any more questions? Let me go back. One thing I do want to inject before I go through some other ways beyond the 90-day roundtable model. I would say one thing that also saw happen to this, going back to the four different groupings of types of parents, believer parents, what was the value of doing the 90 days? One of the things that we heard from them that was very helpful was that we need help onboarding. Like, we're all for the school. I had one dad, and I kind of wanted, I don't know if I should, like, congratulate him or slap him. He's sort of like, it's been 2 weeks, first 2 weeks of school, we had no idea when school started. And I'm thinking, there's no way that we didn't communicate that to you, but you missed that. So, but at any rate, I thought, okay, and many other basic questions of how does school work? What is, at Ambrose, what does exordium mean? Like, we have to have classical names for everything. So we have to almost have a dictionary to define all the ways that we define things in the school. So we realized, you know what, we were missing, Kirk and I said, 20 years into this, we don't have a host family situation. We need to develop host families. So this year, because of these roundtable meetings, we're partnering up new families with existing families so that they can learn what our weird words mean, they can learn when school starts, how to manage carpool, just being more purposeful in host families, because we want these believers to stay believers, not quickly become dissatisfied along the way. New parent orientation will be changed this year because of the 90-day experience that we went through, because, again, we heard from parents. They were saying, we just need better orientation. So we're going to make a much more robust Tuesday. I think it's going to be Tuesday lunch and Saturday morning. Pick either one. If you're a new family, you better be there. And by the way, having done the church world and done premarital counseling, you can get a young couple to come to 15 premarital counseling sessions. And once they're married, they will never come back unless they're in divorce's door. And the same thing with parents coming to school. If they're new parents, you can ask them to do anything, and they'll pretty much show up and do it. So it's like, guess what? You're going to be at a six-hour new parent orientation on Saturday. Yes! And they will show up. And I know schools that do that. And I think you should think about that. We should think about being more intentional. We learned that. Participants, I think in that participant category of parents, we realized we need to do a better job of volunteering. They want to be active in the school, but we realized that we had this hodgepodge. A newsletter would go out occasionally, hey, dad, work day, come if you can. We are still looking into this, but we need a more robust way to identify skills and interests and then be able to route them into opportunities at the school. We've got dads that show up every time we do a drama production and we build props. I know there's more than two dads in the school that like power tools and you throw in some chicken biscuits. You can get 15 dads there in a heartbeat, but we've got to communicate that better. We learned that through doing this roundtable discussion, onboarding. The enthusiast category, these, again, are folks that they'll talk great, but they maybe are not hands-on yet. One thing that I think would help our enthusiasts is actually giving them an experience in the classroom. And one of the things that some of the dads came up with is the idea of a back-to-school night where we get several of our upper school teachers and we create an hour-long class where you get to go to school. And we're going to give you a little Dostoevsky excerpt and you're going to read that in advance and you're going to get to experience school, or maybe it's a science class. I think this experiential opportunity to engage in the school would bring, they're already enthusiastic, but help them engage more and catch a better vision for the school. And again, dads came up with that idea. I'm like, great, we'll do it if that's what you want. I mentioned the campouts and the cookouts and the work days together. And then I think with the consumer dads, what do you do with them, whether they're disillusioned or just distracted? I think those are largely going to be people you're going to have to go after one-on-one. And we've got a running list of to have coffee with dads. Because some stuff came up, it's like, I now know you've got a little bee in your bonnet. I know there's something that needs to be worked out. Let me go and listen. And even if it's nothing more than effectively an exit interview, I want to hear and honor what you are concerned about as you walk out of our school. So a lot of learning there. Real quickly, in the last couple of minutes, other ways to build connection. Mothers face-to-face. This is something that actually we started in Atlanta, and it was basically an effort on the part of moms that wanted to do a mom's prayer group and found that it was sort of moderately attended. And so they said, what if once a month we'll host it at someone's house and we'll bring a speaker in, famous or otherwise, and just basically create a fellowship opportunity. That really helped build momentum with the moms. That's been successful there. In-home coffees, new families. I did this when I was in Atlanta, kind of another version of the 90 days. Smaller setting, we had about 80 families. And I basically committed as the head of school that every new family, I'm going to make a personal house call, bring the Starbucks to their home. And this was, it worked. Again, it was crazy time. We averaged like 10 or 15 new families. If you're in a smaller school, you can do this. And it's amazing. First of all, they don't know what to think of it. Like, again, what's wrong? Nothing's wrong. I'm coming to your home. And so I would come by on an evening, like 7 o'clock, whenever it worked for them. I'd bring coffee. Usually they provide the coffee when all is said and done. But I would stop by just for a quick, I want to get to know you better. How did you meet? How long have you been married? Tell me about your kids. The kids would come in their pajamas and give me a hug. And like, no, I don't have more homework. I mean, it was just amazing. Just join up early on when you're still in the believer stage. There's ways you can do that. And you may be going, that is crazy. But if you have a small screen, pull it off. Required classes. This is something from my church experience. Again, the same idea. When people are coming into an organization, they tend to be much more ready to do anything. So in churches, we had things like AIM class, Adventures in Membership. And it's 3 consecutive classes, and they rotate. So if you only hit this Sunday and that Sunday, you eventually get all 3. But as a new member, we expect you in all 3 classes. You can capture that momentum early on and use it as an opportunity, like a new parent orientation to come indoctrinate and connect them in. And then grade level surveys and meetings are another way, I think, to connect. Keith Nix does this really well at Veritas in Richmond. And the idea is they do a survey, like in 5th grade. They survey all the 5th grade parents. And then they have a 5th grade meeting, and they share the results of that. And so that parent that's all worked up about homework will find out that 96% of the parents think the homework is more than reasonable. And the one that's going, I'm in the 4%, kind of has to, kind of seize their place and all that. But there's also a way of just saying, hey, we care about you, we're listening to you, and we're connecting to you. So we are basically at time. Are there a couple just last burning questions? I'll be around if you have. Yes, ma'am. Yes. I think it was January to May was when all was said and done. It took that amount of time. We picked that time because we figured January is the sort of doldrums of the year. You've got enough. If you start out in August, September, everybody's already kind of upbeat. It just seemed like it worked for us to do it. I think you could start it in October maybe, but clearly by the time we hit early May, it's like it's too late now. Yes. We did. I mean, it was overall the same, but we nuanced a little. We made more efforts to let them do more talking. We realized that the value of it was not us disseminating the 20 great things. So Kirk went from about 10 minutes of amazing to about 5 minutes of amazing, and it still had the same effect. And then we had more time, but each meeting took very different. We leaned different ways based on where they were interested in what they were talking about. I would print out each meeting right on my Outlook calendar. Like, here's who's coming, and here's the, and then I just wrote handwritten notes at the bottom, and then I assimilated that into an overall document. Yes, sir. Were the dads required? Yes, just one. There were all, if I understand your question, all the meetings were the same format. So it's like any one of these 70 you can pick to come to. It doesn't matter. As long as there's time in there, unless it was already booked up with the 5. So, yes. Okay. Oh, so, yes. 3. So there's, yeah, and that's, we're still working on that. And you can do that a variety of ways. 3 to 6. So it's basically 3 meetings, 1, 2, and 3 are all the same, and you're having them multiple times. So if you can, it's okay to come at the first meeting, is the second. In the series, you can come to that one first. It doesn't matter just as long as you hit all 3. They're all on different topics. Yeah. But that's, I would say that's more of a us telling you versus the conversation. Last question. Yeah. Completely. Yes. Because we were very comfortable with the moms. I would think so. Yeah. I think that it should be. I mean, again, you can do, we always had 2 there together. So, I mean, you could have female head of school and administrator, or however you want to divide it up. But I definitely think that's important. It would work. Okay. Well, thank you very much. I hope this has been helpful. I would love your feedback. Thank you. How do I require them?